You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast.
The Sick Podcast.
With Tony Maradero.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the bomb!
Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est le
Canadiens.
Et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Stanley pour les Canadiens. Le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaBee.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground. Your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
Marinaro on this Wednesday, March 13. I hope everyone is doing well. Special thanks to everyone watching right now on YouTube, on Facebook, and on Twitter. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you haven't already, tell your friends about it. Thank you so much for your support, Sick Army, Sick Community. You guys and girls are the absolute best. It is the Sick Podcast. And it's brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, recently named by Deloitte, and CIBC as one of Canada's best managed companies, the country's leading business award. It recognizes leading innovative and world-class companies. The best managed Canadian companies designation fuels Energy's purpose of creating progress for their customers, their employees, and their communities. Join a winning team and check out Energy's career page for available opportunities. Also, those guys right behind me, LaBee.TV, brewed in Quebec, a winner of a dozen international awards. LaBee.TV offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. LaBee.TV, embrace your true nature. Also brought to you in part by Accent Insurance Solutions. All insurance isn't created equal. You know where to find the right solution for you. Accent Insurance. Accent doesn't sell insurance. They shop it for you to find the right product right on the money. Whatever your insurance needs, whether it's home, automobile, or business, call the Accent team today at 514-363-3636 and get the right solution at the right price. Visit their website, accentassurance.com. Also brought to you in part by Playground this Friday, March 15 and Saturday, March 16. Don't miss the ultimate party cover band, X Prime at Playground. This energetic trio is guaranteed to get the party started and heat up the dance floor, playing hits of every style from any era. They can do it all. Playground, your ultimate destination for entertainment, just over the Mercier Bridge. Visit playground.ca for details. And that's it for now. We'll get to someone in particular and a sponsor in particular a little bit later, as I could try and get another smile out of Craig Button, TSN hockey analyst and director of scouting. How are you?
Good, Tony. How are you doing?
Nice. Extremely well.
Nice game on Tuesday for the Montreal Canadiens. They jumped out quick, and certainly Caden Primo was stellar. Let's use that word. He was stellar in the net.
Yeah. What do you make of, because I talked about it earlier today on radio, and I was told, oh, it's the Columbus Blue Jackets. And I get it. They're not the Soviet Union of the 70s or the 80s. But They do have a 5-on-5 line, their number one line that has had a lot of success since the All-Star game. They are a team that's playing loose. There's no pressure on them whatsoever. I fully understand that they were missing an entire line yesterday. If you look at Kent Johnson, Adam Fantilli, and Patrick Laine. So there was a line missing out of their lineup, but they took it to the Montreal Canadiens, especially in period number one. I thought Primo made some very, very big saves. It's the National Hockey League, and I get it. Some games are easier than others, but nevertheless, very impressed by Caden Primo last night.
Yeah, I mean, you can always rationalize what a shutout means, what a certain type of game means against a certain type of opponent, but everything that was shot at Caden Primo, he stopped. And to your point, Tony, he was able to be challenged at different points, like with some rebound shots. He was I'm watching him in the net. He was alert. He was tracking the play. And there's one thing when a goaltender, to me, ends up what I call making accidental saves. I didn't see a lot of accidental saves in Caden Primo's game on Tuesday night. And I don't care who you're playing. I think that becomes really encouraging. The good goaltenders make it look easy. And I thought Caden looked settled in the net. He looked real confident in the net and was fully deserving of the, what was it, a 41 save shutout? I think it was 41.
It was. I was very surprised. I said this last night. Max LaPierre, former Montreal Canadian, was joining me on the podcast. I was very surprised last night when I saw some stats put up on social media that 42 saves is the most a Montreal Canadiens goaltender has made in Montreal Canadiens history in a shutout win at home. He was one save away from tying that record. And I was shocked that it was only 42. Like, I would have thought it would have been a 50 save performance. But then again, the Montreal Canadiens had some very, very good teams, and they didn't give up 42 shots all that often in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, did they?
But just think about that stat, and you think about how many home games the Montreal Canadiens have played in over 100 years, right? And yep. And to think that it's one save short of the all-time record for saves in a home game. I mean, I guess it's that saying, if you stay around long enough, you're going to see something for the first time. And even with a club like the Montreal Canadiens, 100 years old, greater than 100 years old, there's groundbreaking things that happen.
Yeah. I could understand if it was the Scotty Bowman era, because the other team hardly had the puck. But hey, Craig, I wanted to get the laugh out of you. So, of course, I'm not going to forget them. Also brought to you in part by Manscaped. The Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. I was waiting for that smile. There it is. He's blushing. Look at him. Top of the evening to you. The episode is brought to you by the St. Patrick's Day Shamrock Shavers Manscaped. This year, don't just chase rainbows. Make your own pot of gold and groom your little leprechaun with the leaders in below the kilt care. Say goodbye to your clover forest with Manscaped's Lawnmower 5.0 and let your confidence shine bright. Embrace the luck of the Irish and join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped. Head over to manscaped.com and use code Montreal for 20% off plus free shipping. That's 20% off and free shipping with code Montreal at manscaped.com. Okay. I waited all day and all afternoon to get that smile from Craig Button.
I got to tell you a funny story. So a dear friend of mine that I grew up with, Charlie Gendre, he lives in New England now, and he goes by Gendron. That's a whole different story for another day, but Charlie Gendre. So he's married to an esthetician. And she has said to me a number of times, can you talk to Charlie about manscaping? So I'm going to have to get one of those. I'm going to use your discount. His birthday's coming up in April, and I'm going to make sure I get him one of those. It'll make his lovely wife, Dawn, very happy.
All right. You know what? I'm happy to hear it. Caden Primo, there's a lot that has been said about him. Look, I'm not going to get carried away after one game. But I believed when the Canadians took him in the seventh round that was, you know, he was playing, I think it was in the USHL, and then he didn't have a very good year. Correct. He didn't have a very good year. And so the stats were not that great, or else, you know, there's no way a 6'3" goalie with the genetics that he had would go to the seventh round. But then you see the next couple of years that he had in Northeastern where his stats were absolutely lights out. And I thought, you know what, this could prove to be a pretty good pick. I won't get carried away once again with one game or the fact that he's got two shutouts in the last two home games. But I'll say this, and it's a discussion that I had last night and even earlier today. So he's 24 years old. Samuel Montembeau is 27. Montembeau, 2.5 years ago, when the Canadians picked him up on waivers, everyone said, who is this guy? And in his first couple of games, not too many people were blown away. I said to my buddy George Larac earlier this afternoon on radio, I said, who's to say that in 2.5 years from now, Caden Primeau won't be writing the same script that Samuel Montembeau has in the last couple of years? Who's to say? They could be at the very same spot.
Well, we know that goaltenders, you know, for the most part, you know, mature a little bit later. I equate goaltending to pitching in Major League Baseball. You can play the position and be, but you got to learn the position. Baseball pitchers, they can throw, but they got to learn how to pitch. I think the same thing applies to goaltenders in the National Hockey. You got to learn the nuances of the position, the technical aspects of the position. And there's not a lot of room for forgiveness in the goaltending position. And I think that that is something that has to be taken into consideration. How old was Ken Dryden when he broke into the NHL with the Montreal Canadiens?
Mid-20s, if memory serves me well. Was he 25 or 26?
Yeah. You know, he had played at Cornell. He played for the Canadian national team, right? He played in Nova Scotia with the Voyageurs before being called up in the spring of 1971. And we know what the history was after that. So there's a perfect example of somebody. I mean, the Boston Bruins drafted Ken Dryden, and he ended up being traded to the Montreal Canadiens.
That's unbelievable.
It really is when you think about it, right? Like you think about the great rivalry. Boston's coming into Montreal on Thursday night. It's a great rivalry. One of sports' great, great rivalries. And you think about that. But again, back to the technical aspects of it. And you know, one of the things, and knowing Ken and listening to Ken and hearing Ken over the years, he talks about that 1972 series playing against the vaunted Soviets and how great they were. And he said they broke his confidence to be a goaltender. And he said, like, in the tournament, like, in that series, he was trying to find his game, trying to find his ability. Now, this is somebody that was older. He had played internationally. He was really, 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 it would be an understatement to say he was a student of the game. Ken's been a marvelous student in anything that he's been involved in. But just think about that. 1972 playing against the vaunted Soviet, and how great they were. And he's talking, I mean, he'd already won a Stanley Cup. He'd already been Rookie of the Year. And like Conn Smythe, it blows your mind to think that that's what, but everybody goes through these periods. And to answer, I don't know if I'm answering it. I'm concurring with your premise that Caden Primeau right now maybe just coming into his own. And I loved what Jake Allen had to say about the three-goalie situation in Montreal after he was traded. He talked about, you know, there was some difficulty in it. You're not, no, but he goes, everybody handled it well. And then he had a lot of platitudes for Caden Primeau, how hard he works, how seriously he takes his craft. And, you know, Jake Allen, you're not going to fool Jake Allen. So I think on, you know, with Jake Allen's departure and hearing his comments about Caden Primeau, and then watching Caden, you know, play as well as he has, I think there's lots to be encouraged about with his future.
Jake Allen's a class act. Wanted to stay here. His family loved it here. But ultimately, after a discussion with Kent Hughes, he chose to waive because New Jersey was not on his list of teams that he could be traded to. So he accepted to go to New Jersey. You know, so that he could work with the Montreal Canadiens, and they were good with him. And he said, I'm going to be good with you. And, you know, when every athlete, of course, has a lot of pride, some more than others. And, you know, deep down in his heart of hearts, he probably thought, you know what, if I'm at my best, I could be the number one out of this trio. But ultimately, he ends up losing out. They go with two younger goaltenders. And yet he's got nothing but accolades to say about the two other guys that he ends up losing out to. It's really something. And I find it's kind of cool, Craig, that here we are one night before the Canadians are going to take on the Boston Bruins tomorrow. We're talking about Ken Dryden. His name comes up. And, you know, Ken Dryden became Ken Dryden versus the Bruins, really. You talked about that 72 Summit Series. Well, the 71 Series versus the Boston Bruins is you know, my dad arrived in Canada from Italy back in 1967, and he quickly embraced the sport of hockey. One of the reasons was soccer was not always on television. They actually had to pay entry to go to a cinema, and they can only watch the second half of select games. And the other one was he found similarities between hockey and soccer. You know, soccer is 11v11, and soccer is 6v6, and soccer has a ball, and hockey has a puck, and soccer, you kick the ball, and hockey, obviously, you use your stick. But to this day, there's two series that stand out for him, right? 71 versus the Bruins and 79 versus the Bruins. Both Ken Dryden.
Well, it always amazes me as we talk a little bit about Kent, and remind me to come back to Kent Hughes when we finish with visits. You never want to put Ken Dryden on the back burner. I never will. You think about Ken, and a lot of people said, "Oh, anybody could have played for the Montreal Canadiens in the net. Anybody could have played." And I'll tell you what, I've heard it from so many different people that played with Ken Dryden, Scotty Bowman, players, Hall of Fame players. They said for Ken, his margin of error was very, very thin with the Montreal Canadiens. Everybody thinks that it was. He said he knew that he was going to get 4 or 5 really good quality chances against him in every game. And he said that was just on average. He said against the better teams, he said he knew he was going to get more than that. And he knew as good as the team was in front of him, that he knew he couldn't be anything less than just as outstanding so that the opponent couldn't get any type of confidence. And to a player, to a person, everybody said that Ken Dryden had a mental strength and an ability to understand that when it was 2-0, you weren't going to make it 2-1. And all those things that go with it. You think about that series in 71 and some of the high scoring games. And, you know, Ken was on the wrong side of some of those, but then he bounced back. You think about the Chicago Blackhawks series. You think about going through, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers in 1976. They won 4 straight. They were close games. And, you know, Reggie Leach was the MVP of that playoff series, the Conn Smythe Trophy winner. And I know listening to Bob Clark, he said, yeah, that was a great Canadiens team. He goes, but we couldn't get them back on their heels because Dryden wouldn't let us get them back on their heels. Like, wow. That's a 3-time MVP in the National Hockey League, Bobby Clark saying it. The Bruins, they were the same way. Ken Dryden, arguably, and I know we get into the discussion about Hasek and
I love where this is going. I love where this is going. Continue, Craig.
There's no way Ken Dryden cannot be considered one of the greatest goaltenders that's ever put on a goalie pad.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
John, no way.
So when you dig deep into Montreal Canadiens history, you're going to find a lot of people who are going to tell you that if Patrick Waugh would have played on those teams that Ken Dryden played on, that he would have won all kinds of cups. And you know what? They're probably right. And you'll find a lot of people that will tell you that if Ken Dryden played on the teams that Patrick Waugh played on, they're not so sure that he would have won the 2 cups that Patrick won. And who knows? They're probably right. We'll never know, right? Having said that, as good as those teams were, Ken won the cup 6 of 8 years. 6 of 8. I mean, for Patrick to have done better, he's going to have to 7 of 8 or 8 of 8, 6 of 8. And, you know, that year in 71, nobody thought they were going to beat the Bruins.
Well, they were the big bad Bruins, Tony. Like, I will say this. If you go back at history, like what Ken Dryden did in 1971 what was one of the greatest playoff performances ever because the Boston Bruins were so unbelievably great. I mean, they'd won the Cup in 1970. They had all those great players, amongst them Orr and Esposito. And so it's easy to say, oh, Patrick Roy. Like, Patrick Roy was a great goaltender. Don't get me wrong. He won four Stanley Cups, and I'm never going to say anything like that. But what Ken Dryden did in 1971 was reminiscent of what Patrick Roy did in 86 and in 93. Let's be very clear on that. And even when you go to 1979, and, you know, three in a row, teams were gunning. The Islanders were a good team. The Toronto Maple Leafs were a good team. You know, we know how good the Boston Bruins were and the New York Rangers. You know, that pressure, and you think about everything that goes with the standard that the Montreal Canadiens had set. Ken was a huge part of that. They lost game one of the Stanley Cup final to the New York Rangers, and then they won four straight. And certainly, different eras, Patrick's one of the greatest that's ever played. I'm never going to say anything. But when people, in my view, and this is my own personal view, start to say that, oh, yeah, well, anybody could have won there. No, you couldn't have. No, you couldn't have. And I will argue that as good as those Montreal Canadiens teams were, You needed some really. How about 1973? Look at all the injuries Montreal had in 1973 when they won the Cup. Just go back and look at some of the key players that weren't playing. And Ken Dryden, I'm saying it, one of the greatest that's ever put the goalie pads on in that position.
So this is not going to be a very popular opinion coming out of Montreal, but I'm going to give you my opinion anyway. When you look at the greats in goal, you know, Ken Dryden, Patrick Roy, Marty Brodeur, you know, the list goes on and on. There's so many great ones, right? For me, when they were all at their best, at their most dominant, Dominic Kasek is the most dominant goaltender I've seen in my lifetime. It was for a shorter period of time. Brodeur and Roy, obviously, Brodeur had tremendous longevity, tremendous numbers, aided by a very defensive system as well, but still, he still had to do it. Patrick Roy had an amazing career, four Stanley Cups, two in Montreal, two in Colorado. But when the Dominator was on, I didn't think the other team was going to score a goal. Like, okay. when Roy was on and Brodeur was on, I thought it was a matter of time the other team would score one. When Hasek was on, I didn't think the other team was going to score a goal. When he beat Canada in Nagano, I think there's a shot that deflected that ended up beating him in the top corner to force a shootout. But I didn't think they were going to score that game. I thought they could have played for 2 weeks and they weren't going to score. So not a popular opinion coming out of Montreal to not say that the most dominant goaltender wasn't a goalie from Quebec, because Quebec produced so many great goalies and the Montreal Canadiens produced so many great goalies. But Hasek was the most dominant I've seen in my lifetime.
If recollection serves me right, Dominic Hasek won six Vezinas and two Hart trophies. Yeah, as a no goaltender like has those types of numbers. I'm pretty sure that that's what Dominic did. So don't be surprised by what I'm going to say here. I agree with you. I think Dominic Hasek was the greatest goaltender this game has ever seen. In 1999, go back and look at that Stanley Cup final. And our team in Dallas, Hall of Famers galore. You go look at the team in Buffalo. And I can tell you, and Ed Belfour will tell you this, one of the Hall of Famers, a goaltender at the other end. I'm convinced. Now keep in mind, Eddie Belfour beat Patrick Roy. I'm convinced that if we don't have Eddie Belfour, that our chances of beating Buffalo and Dominic Hasek are diminished. Not because we wouldn't have had a good goaltender, but because Eddie knew how good Dominic was because they'd played together in Chicago. And Eddie had this unbelievable confidence about him. And he hadn't won a cup at that point in time. And he wanted to show that he was good. So the mindset and Eddie, and he said it, he's quoted on it. He said it numerous times publicly and privately. He said, I know. And he goes to game six. He goes, I know the cup's in the building. I know our team is dominating and playing so well in the game, and we're the better team. He goes, but I'm looking, and they have Hasek. He goes, all I can think in my head is I can't let another goal in. Because to your point, wow. Think about it. Like it was 5 minutes left in the third overtime before Brett Hull scored the winning goal. Just think about you're sitting
was at it
the
a goal? End. Was
yeah,
it a goal?
Yeah, it was a goal. Don't start, okay?
Of course it was. You got a Stanley Cup ring. Of course it was a goal.
Anyway, but just think about a goaltender of Eddie Belfour's stature, and he knows at the other end, boy, we're really caring. We're doing our things and everything that goes with it. And he's sitting there. That's the respect that Dominic Hasek had. And it was unbelievable. What we tried to do in our scouting reports heading into that series was we didn't talk about how great Dominic Hasek was, because you didn't have to say that because everybody knew it. One of the things we tried to emphasize to our players, and it's a different era, keep in mind, his save percentage was about 93%. So we said to our players, the quicker you get to 100 shots, the quicker you get to 7 goals. That's wow. how we positioned it, because we wanted to humanize Dominic Hasek. Because quite frankly, Tony, he was anything but human.
Yes, yeah, so you're not looking at the stats from the other perspective. That's real interesting. Man, you're bringing back some incredible memories. And time flies when you're having fun. It also goes to show how old we're getting, at least I am anyway. Because you talked about Eddie Belfour and Dominic Hasek. I think Dominic Hasek became Dominic Hasek when he was backing up Eddie Belfour. Correct me if I'm wrong. There was a Stanley Cup final. I believe it was 92, but I could be wrong. Pittsburgh versus Chicago. And the Penguins got to Belfour, and they go to Dominic Hasek, who was also in his mid, past his mid-20s, who was backing up Belfour. And the Penguins ended up, I think, sweeping the Blackhawks, if memory serves me well. I could be wrong.
Right.
But
four straight.
Mario Lemieux had a breakaway on Dominic Hasek as soon as Hasek came into the game. And you know Mario, right-handed shot, was always going top corner, glove side. Every goalie in the world knew it, and yet he always scored anyway. Well, on that particular night, Hasek comes up with the glove and makes a glove save on Mario, and I think Mario was shocked that Hasek stopped him. It was that moment and that save, I think, that Dominic Hasek ended up becoming Dominic Hasek, and then he was ended up being traded to the Buffalo Sabres. And, of course, the rest, as they say, is history. Anyway, it was...
How about this? Michel Goulet, and I love Michel, and Michel's yeah. a Hall of Famer, 500 goal scorer. We know how great he was. He told me this a number of times. He goes, I knew how good Dominic was when Michel was playing in Chicago. He said, I knew how good he was. I had to play against him every day in practice.
Like, wow, amazing.
When a 500 goal scorer starts telling you how great a goaltender is, when Mario Lemieux doesn't score, because if anybody should expect to score, it would be Mario, right? It doesn't score.
Yeah.
Doesn't that tell you a pretty big story?
Folks, this is what I love about Craig Button, and there's a lot that I love about Craig Button. Going into this podcast, you know, never would I have imagined that we would have been talking about Ken Dryden, Patrick Waugh, Dominic Hasek, Ed Belfour. The list goes on and on. But really, and so what am I saying? Like, nothing scripted with Craig. And he just says, talk to me about anything, and I'm good. And there's not too many people that have that quality, Craig. So all the credit
Thank
to you.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. We're going to move on. We're going to talk about the Canadiens power play.
Can I just add one quick thing? I want you to remind me about Kent Hughes. Casey DeSmith came to the Montreal Canadiens, and Kent Hughes said, I'm going to work with you. And he ended up being able to move him over to the Vancouver Canucks. Jake Allen, you know, treated really well by the Montreal Canadiens, and working with Kent Hughes works with him, and he ends up in New Jersey, and nothing but great things. That is a direct reflection on the culture that Kent Hughes has built in Montreal.
And you can add Jeff Petrie's name to that list, by the way.
Jeff Petrie, yeah. So I'm not trying to exclude anybody. But when you establish a culture like that, where understanding that players, Sean Monahan will speak highly of Kent Hughes. You just look what he did this year coming in and everything he did. And I know there's many others, you know, Brendan Gallagher, you know, with his mother dealing with her cancer and everything. I'm sure Brendan has story. Like, but when you establish a culture like that, that is something that gets roots, and those roots only become stronger and stronger and stronger. Everybody hears about it. Everybody knows about it. And so this is a real tip of the cap to Mr. Yeah. Kent Hughes and his group.
Speaking
around
of him. Kent Hughes, yeah, he was adamant about not sending Jake Allen to the Laval Rocket and ending this whole three-goalie rotation, going with two goalies. And it was a whole respect thing for the career that Allen has had and how much he wanted to be in Montreal. He didn't want to embarrass him, that way. Pierre Maguire and I talked about this probably give or take about a month and a half ago. And I said, Pierre, what do you think of Kent Hughes saying that he's not sending Jake Allen down to Laval? And Pierre was saying back then, Tony, this is a big respect thing and it's a big culture thing. And you know what? When you extend a player like Allen 2 years the way he had, if you end up sending him down, it's not seen very well because other players around the league say, I'm not going to go there if I'm an unrestricted free agent. Look what happened with Jake Allen. He ended up signing a 2-year deal. They ended up sending him down. And he said, that goes a long way around the league. So to add everything you've been saying about Kent Hughes, there's another example of working with players and not wanting to embarrass them.
Yeah. Again, the players, you know, there's going to be times when the players are performing to their capabilities, beyond their capabilities, and there's going to be times when they're not. And people don't need support when things are going well. They need support when things aren't going well. And I think that Kent and certainly Jeff Gorton, who brought in Kent, and Marty St. Louis have demonstrated that time and time and time again.
I've been pretty tough on former GMs of the Montreal Canadiens and or coaches. I'm a pretty demanding guy, to say the least. But I'm going to tell you something, and I know it's kind of weird, but I'll say it anyway. Considering where the Canadiens are, considering what their philosophy is, where they are, and their whole game plan and the rebuild, I think the guys that they have leading this organization in place are the best possible guys for the job. Like Jeff Gorton, Kent Hughes, Marty St. Louis, I think they're perfect for the context that is.
Well, okay, so I'm going to go back to 1971, okay?
Like just, there we go.
Well, I'm going to give you an example.
I wasn't even born yet, but I know the history, though. I know it.
I want to say something to you quickly, too, about you weren't born. You talked about your dad coming over from Italy in 1967. I have a lot of friends whose fathers were like your dad, Italians, and their fathers came over in 1967, but they ended up in Toronto. So they didn't get the benefit of all the success in hockey that your father and many others that came to Montreal got. So maybe yeah. Everybody thought, well, the Leafs won the cup in 67. We're going to Toronto. Little did they know we're approaching 60 years. Anyway, all kidding aside, in 1971, Claude Ruel started the year coaching the Montreal Canadiens. He didn't finish the year coaching the Montreal Canadiens. Al McNeil took over the team. And then after that year, Scotty Bowman came in. Al McNeil went back to the Nova Scotia Voyageurs. Now, you think about that. Claude Ruel was phenomenal. He won the Cup in 69 as the head coach. But pressures of the job and everything that went with it, right? So now, he doesn't coach. Al comes in and coaches because they need him then. Stanley Cup winner, and then they go, wait a second here. You're really good, but we got a chance to bring in Scotty Bowman. Scotty won 5 in all those years, right? What you just said, the right person at the right time for the job, that is a real key part of success for any organization at any point in time. Nobody's going to say that somebody wasn't a good coach, but it might not have been the right time for them, or that time might have expired. And certainly, you know, when I look at the Pittsburgh Penguins, I'm not going to look and say Mike Sullivan isn't a really good coach. He's a heck of a coach. He's proven it. But the time might be now to have to get a different coach in there. And I think recognizing when that is and when those moments are really key. So it's a long ways a long ways around about telling you that I agree with you, the right people for the job at this right time.
I know it's not a Pittsburgh Penguins podcast, but I have an opinion on this. I think Ron Hextall blew it a couple of years ago. I think he had to sit down with Sid and sit down with Gino and sit down with Christopher Letang and say, listen, we had an amazing run 15 years together. We won our 3 cups. We have to do what's best for this organization. And we believe it's time for a rebuild. Now, if Sid says to you that he doesn't want to move, he wants to stay a Penguin, I think you still have to tell him, Sid, we're going to accommodate you, but we want to let you know that we are going to start a rebuild. So now if you don't want to accept that, we totally understand. But if you do, we have no problem you being a part of it and basically passing on that culture that you were such a big part of. But anyway, I think they're in no man's land right now. Dubas said, you know, no other choice but to add to the core that was there whose contracts were extended. But I think Hextall should have gone with a rebuild. Anyway, just my opinion. I don't know if you share it or not, but I think at one point, you have your run, and you got to start over again.
Yeah, you do. There becomes a part of recognizing where you're at in the cycle, and that is the key thing. You can't look at your team as you hoped that it could be or that you wished it would be. You have to look at it as it was. And certainly when you have and Sidney Crosby's had a fantastic year. I believe that Malkin and Letang, based on their contracts, have performed really well. I don't think the problem lay in with respect to those players or even Erik Karlsson or Jake Guentzel, who's now traded. The problem is they couldn't build out the roster. They couldn't build out the roster to support those guys. So now as those guys have become older, they're not capable of dominating at the same level that they once did. I'm speaking more to Letang and Malkin. Sidney certainly is. But you not recognizing that, and then, you know, you're right. Like, you got to reinforce it. Then you go and you try to make additions for different reasons. And, you know, we can debate whether Erik Karlsson was the right fit or not. But clearly, this organization didn't read the signs. They didn't read the signs. And I don't know if they're caught now in no man's land. Where they're caught is with a decision that has to be made that, to me, is clear. And anything short of that is just going to prolong the agony and the pain.
Crystal clear. Probably about a month and a half into the season, the Montreal Canadiens were going nowhere with their power play. It was one of the worst power plays in the National Hockey League. And you and I got on Alex Burrows quite a bit. And I think we caught his attention. And who knows, maybe we're part of the whole turnaround and the wake-up call. So thank you very much for that. But lo and behold, the Canadiens now have they've done some improvement. It's hard to really get back up there. I think they're 22nd out of 32nd as we speak at around 19% power play. So it got a lot better than it was. Marty St. Louis earlier today on some of the developments on the power play and some of the things he's been asking for. Let's see if we can bring it up.
A couple of things. On the power play, yesterday you mentioned, you know, the volume shooting that they were doing and shooting from everywhere. If you look, you know, you've talked about how the development of your power play, which is not a volume shooting power play, right? I mean, if you look at the shot numbers, it's tend to prioritize quality. Are there times when that needs to change? That you have to have more of a shooting mentality as opposed to looking for.
I trust. Yeah, I mean, I trust my eye. When my eyes see, like I don't want us just to shoot pucks. Just it's got to be intentions why we're shooting the puck. We have people going there. We have people there. You can't shoot the puck and be a routine save for the goalie, for me, on a power play. Well, it's not a turnover, but it's a whistle probably, or, you know, but, you know, if you create a shot with no traffic, but guys are converging and it's a shot for a rebound and stuff, it's a different story. It creates chaos. They get them out of their structure. You know, it's a fine line, you know, and if your power play is struggling and you look at your shot volume, well, you're probably going to say, boys, let's just have a shooting mentality here and simplify. But, you know, if that's going to be the mentality, then the guys have to be at the net. There's plenty of ways to do it. You just got to be on the same page. If we're going to be a shooting mentality, well, there's going to be less movement and we're just going to have guys in front, you know. So you got to be on the same page.
I like that when he says, we're not just going to shoot the puck on the power play just for the sake of shooting the puck. At least for me anyway, I don't see it that way because some do see it that way, right? They figure the more shots you pepper on the power play, one's eventually going to go in. You said, you know, we told the guys, the faster you get to 100 shots, you're going to get to 7 goals on Dominic Hasek. But always very educational when listening to Marty St. Louis and his eye for the game and situations, huh?
And respectful. You know, he may not fully agree, but he can acknowledge, okay, why that thought would be there and the genesis of the question. Like so much in hockey, it's a moving sport. he talks about everybody having to be on the same page, whatever term you want to use, connected, coordinated, on the same page. Those are all really key things. So to Marty's point, if you shoot the puck and there's not a purpose to you shooting the puck, like somebody trying to go for a rebound or a screen where you're trying to create it, and I'm careful how I say this, but one of the things that we hear often when a puck gets directed towards the net and it goes in, see what happens? Good things happen when you put the puck to the net. Actually, just putting the puck to the net, most times good things don't happen. when there's purpose to what you're doing, guy going to the net, I always say this about a goaltender. The more you can give a goaltender to think about, whether somebody's coming to the net for a rebound, somebody's open up high. When a goaltender cannot just zero in on the shot, then you made him think about a deflection. You're making him think about a rebound. You're making him think about a screen. Now, all of a sudden, the goaltender has to be thinking, okay, I got to make sure I stop this puck. Or there's a rebound because he's right there. Brendan Gallagher's ready to bang it in. So all those things that Marty talks about being on the same page, he used the word chaos. I used the word distraction. More distractions for a goaltender give you more opportunity and allow less ability for him to just zero in, to Marty's phrase, a routine save. And that's where it has to be. I mean, Tony, you watch football. I watch football. Do you just throw the ball into the end zone on every passing play? All the receivers go to the end zone, we'll just throw it up. No, yeah. You do that when it's desperate. And that's at the end of a game. You don't have timeouts. You got a long way to go. You don't do that every play. In fact, you do it rarely. But when it works, do we hear NFL or CFL announcers go, yeah, throw the ball in the end zone. Good things happen. But we hear it in hockey. And quite frankly, I think it's a low common denominator comment.
Wow, that's a great way of looking at how often you shoot the puck or not shoot the puck. Do you go to the end zone all the time? But at the same time, I like it. I like it. I'm going to use that one. By the way, did you use my game of Rummy on trade deadline?
I did.
You did, really?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, I talked about
Rummy 101.
Oh, yeah?
Rummy 101, yeah. Mike Johnson and I.
Oh, really?
I'm trying to remember which one we were talking about. We were talking about remember.
Well, on the podcast, we talked about Jonathan Kovacevic in that regard, right? Where we said, you know, every team is going to need a third-pairing guy who's going to make less than $1 million. You know, when you play Rummy 101, if you're at 95 or 96, you're going to have to hold a 2 and a 3 in your hand or 2 or 3 in your hand.
And that's what we were talking about, where a team could look. I'm trying to I think we must have been talking about Toronto. It must have been near the end of the day. We were talking about Toronto, what might have been available and what wasn't available and what they could afford. And I said, like Tony Marinaro says on the Sick Podcast, Rummy 101, and Mike had a chuckle out of it. So I don't know if
that's pretty cool. Him.
But anyway, we were to that point, you know, again, Marty is really sharp. He's really sharp. And there's not one right way to do things. There's many ways to be right and a power play. So I think there's a couple of things on a power play that are essential. Number one, you have to be able to move the puck quickly and crisply. Quickly and crisply. Teams are too aggressive. When you bobble a puck or you're too slow moving the puck, number one, they're going to put pressure on you if you're bobbling it. Number two, if you're slow with it, they're getting into the position to just block you off. That's number one. And then number two, I believe there has to be player movement. And number three, there has to be distractions around the net for the goaltender. I think those now you can set up in many different ways and different power plays have different types of personnel, and personnel counts. I mean, when you have, you know, Alexander Ovechkin scoring on the power play from that spot, that's different than having somebody else there. So, but I think those three elements are really, really important for a power play. And I think that if those things are emphasized, how your setup is, what your philosophy is in terms of, to Marty's point, that's fine. We'll have shot volume, but we better have people at the net.
And of course, we can add to that an efficient zone entry.
Oh yeah,
and winning offensive zone faceoff. Speaking of which, Alex Newhook won one yesterday. Suzuki picked up the puck on the clear faceoff win. He got it to Slavkovsky, who got it to Matheson, back to Slavkovsky, back to Matheson, to Cole Caulfield, back to Matheson, to Slavkovsky, one-timer. He scores. Newhook, since returning from injury, has been on the first wave of that power play. He's been really, really good. Craig, have you seen enough from Newhook at the center ice position to convince you that he's a center or a winger?
Well, I love the versatility, and I've watched Alex for a long time. I've watched Alex since he was playing U16 in Ontario, and he was always a really good offensive producer at the center ice position. You start to move into different spots as you progress into pro hockey, and certainly, you know, Alex, you know, has found his way onto the wing. The fact that he's got that versatility is a good thing. But when you trade Sean Monahan and you don't have any other real significant player, in my view, that can go and play the center ice position, now you know that Alex has played it. And sometimes through a scenario like that, where you say, let's see what he can do, and then he gets comfortable back playing in that role. He's a really good, quick player. He's fast. The power play affords him a little bit more room on the ice. He's not a number one center in my view, but do I think he can play as a number two center? I do think he can play as a number two center. And I think that he can be a real good offensive producer. And if he can't play as a second line center, okay, that's fine. But then he can play in your top six and your top two lines on the left wing. I think he can do that. So that's we're talking about value in a player. I mean, Kent Hughes signed him immediately to a four-year contract. He's got three after that. I think there's going to be real value, significant value in Alex Newhook. And if he can play in the center ice position, then that's just even more value in my view.
On a third line on a team that wins the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, well, it depends what you want from your third line. It all depends. You know, you've heard me say this before, not every team is built exactly the same way. And certainly when you look at the Vegas Golden Knights last year, we know exactly who their number one center was. It was Jack Eichel. We know who their number four center was. It was Nicolas Roy. Who was their number two center? Was it Chandler Stevenson?
And Carlson was number three.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, but like, you know, yeah, you can interchange them. Like, you know, like you look at them. So all I'm saying is you got two really good players. I got no problem putting them out there.
Yeah, I'll tell you what's going to happen this year. Eichel's going to be number one. Thomas Hertl's going to be number two. Chandler Stevenson's going to go to the wing, I think. And William Carlson will be number three and Nicolas Roy number four.
Well, they've put Carlson on the wing, too. They've had them both being on the wing. Flexibility. There we go. There is no problem with having flexibility with good players.
So here's Alex Newhook, who earlier today was actually asked about next season. Listen carefully.
I know your mindset as a player is on this season, but if you think a little bit about the next season, what do you think of the idea about playing with Kirby Dach maybe on the same line?
Yeah, I think it's exciting. You know, try not to look too far to the future, but, you know, the possibilities there. And, you know, Dach coming out this year hurts us, I think, a bit. And I think at the beginning of the year we had some chemistry there, and it was fun playing alongside him. But I think we can work off each other pretty well there, and being a big body and you know, with my speed, I think could be a pretty fun combo. And I don't think it's you know, out of the question to kind of look there and see the possible connection.
Not out of the question. If he did play with Dach, he most likely would be playing on the wing because the Canadians see Dach as a centerman for now anyway. But at the same time, Maxim LaPierre yesterday, he got a lot of reaction out of this, and I'm going to bring it up. So he said yesterday, he said, Tony, he said, with all due respect to Cole Caulfield, when I take a look at Suzuki, Slavkovsky, and Caulfield, he says, for me, going forward, Caulfield is the number three on that line. And he said, I just think that a more complete line and more of a playoff line would be Suzuki with Slavkovsky and Dach. Now, last season, Dach played center, and he also played on the wing with Suzuki and Caulfield. And when he did, they were like bread and butter. I mean, he was absolutely on fire. He looked fantastic on the wing. My question to you is, what do you think of what Max had to say? Suzuki with Slafkovský and Doc on the wing going forward instead of Doc centering a second line, because I had an answer for Max about that, and I'm wondering what your answer is going to be before I tell you what I was thinking.
Yeah, well, what I would say to that is again, you got two big wingers now. Now you have Kirby and you have Juraj. You know, I mean, that becomes imposing. They chew up ice, they chew up space, they carve out space, and you have a Einstein in the middle of the ice in Nick Suzuki. So when you look at that type of a setup on a line, that's the type of line that can overwhelm opponents. That's the type of line that keeps opposing coaches up at night because of what they bring. I mean, Kirby's got skill. We're watching Juraj really develop that part of his game, and we know what Nick is. What it also does is if you put Cole now on a different line, and why don't we just say this for fun? Why don't we just say the second line's Josh Leroy, Alex Newhook, and Cole Caulfield? Okay, so you might be able to poke holes in that type of a line, but when you start to consider that they can score, they can skate, they can have the ability, they're probably not going to get all the hard defensive matchups that the top line will get. Does that ease it a little bit? Does that allow them to be a little bit more prolific? To me, those are six forwards that have that have a lot of skill and can put opponents back on their heels and make life tough for them and make tough for coaches trying to game plan against that. That's how I would look at it.
Yeah. Who's going in the corners to get that puck on that line, though? There's not a lot of weight on that line. Like, that's a line that I could see having success at home, but on the road, I think it would be a little bit more difficult. My answer, I'll give you a chance to reply, sure. But my answer to Max LaPierre yesterday when he brought that up is I said, Max, for now, Kirby Dock's a centerman on the Montreal Canadiens, but if they end up drafting Caden Lindstrom this summer, then all of a sudden, you talk about flexibility. There's a lot of things that you can do. I mean, Caden Lindstrom could end up being centering a second line for the Canadiens, maybe not right away, but a couple of years from now, and then maybe you end up shifting a Kirby Dock to right wing.
Well, yeah, but again, when you have good players, good teams having good – nobody ever complains about having too many good players. Nobody. I've never heard it. You find a way to get your good players into the right spot. So you can talk about in a game, but think about a roster. Why does your roster always have to be the same? Why does it always have to be the same first line? So you go on the road and you say, okay, Kirby, you're going to play in the middle on the second line. Cole, you're going to move up here. We're going to balance it out. I call that lineup flex. I think lineup flex is really, really important. And again, I'm going to use a football analogy. If you're playing against a really good passing defense, like are you going to just pass the ball all day long? You're going to try to mix it up. You're going to try to – and same thing, if you're going to try to play like run the ball against a real good run defense, I think hockey can do a much better job in what I call working situations. And people go, wow, the schedule isn't the same. The players are so smart. Don't tell me they can't adapt quickly. If you're going into a game and you need a little bit more weight on a second line, a bigger center, you switch them there. Kirby Dock can play right wing. He can play center. I bet you he could play defense if you asked him to.
All right, we'll end with this. The last time the Montreal Canadiens played the Boston Bruins, a game in Boston, the Canadiens gave up 9. Samuel Montembeau was chased after 8. The Canadiens will host the Boston Bruins tomorrow night. Here's Marty St. Louis on playing the Bruins tomorrow night.
You played Boston. It was 9-4, albeit not a 9-4 game.
Yeah.
Do you want memory of that to be in your players' minds?
Yeah, I think they remember that. And I, if I remember correctly, it was a pretty close game going to the third, right? Was it a tie game? And we were down 1, maybe? I think we were down 1. It did. Yeah, sure did. Yeah, that's an understatement. Yeah, it got away fast. Very far, too. But, yeah, I mean, I think as players are proud, right? And then they're coming in our building. You know, I feel the two nights we went there this year, I feel they were honoring something, you know, and you know, actually we played better the second game. The first game we played there, we weren't good at all. And actually, like, I felt like that game springboarded us to a better place. But that second game we played there, we were pretty good. Not perfect, but we were battling. Obviously, the third period was what it was. But, you know, I think they're coming into our building now, and the guys will remember that for sure.
He can laugh about it now. Eh? He says, yeah, got away. Yeah, got away pretty far. That's an understatement, he says, that it got away. That's pretty good. But so, listen, if his players didn't remember it already, it was brought up again. You gave up 9 the last time you played versus the Bruins. A little pride here. It's a rivalry game. I look forward to it.
I think we always look forward to these types of games with longtime rivals. And I, when you look at what happened previously in a game, I mean, Marty's right. The players haven't forgotten about that. They understand what happened. And they're proud. There's no question they're proud. So they want to make a good account of themselves. You don't want to get into these situations where, you know, bad losses pile into another bad loss, into another bad loss. And certainly that is something that the Montreal Canadiens haven't allowed themselves to do, and that's the springboard comment, right? Like, okay, we don't want to end up here. Let's start moving forward and let's learn from that. A good team like the Boston Bruins, I mean, keep in mind, they lost to the St. Louis Blues 5-1 on Tuesday night. They're going to come in with a little bit of snarl. So Montreal having the reminder of the previous game in Boston, Boston having the reminder of their previous game versus St. Louis, should set up for a pretty good, intense game, because you know one thing, the players on Montreal remember, and Jim Montgomery's reminding his players of what wasn't good enough versus St. Louis.
Yeah, and Jim Montgomery's buddies are calling him saying, hey, what are you going to do versus the Canadians? Let's see, because of course, big game for him too as he returns home to coach in front of family and friends. We look forward to it, Craig, as I always look forward to talking to you every Wednesday. I hope we can chat again 1 week from today. Always a pleasure, my man.
We will be able to. I'm on the Western swing with the Canadians. So I'm in Edmonton next Tuesday, Vancouver Thursday, and then the following Sunday in Seattle, and then the Tuesday in Colorado. So it'll be Wednesday night pleasures with lots to recap.
Thank you, Craig. Have a great night, my friend.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. There you have it. The Sick Podcast, brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, brought to you in part by Labitte TB, brought to you in part by Playground, brought to you in part by Accent Insurance Solutions, and brought to you in part by Manscaped. Special thanks to all of you, my Sick Army, my Sick community, for watching. If you like it, comment Sick, S-I-C-K, share it with your friends. Don't forget to subscribe to all of our channels, especially our YouTube channel, our Twitter account as well, and our Facebook group. Special thanks to Aniello Juliana and Sammy at Master Control. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on Apple. I'm not asking Aniello to do that, by the way. I'm asking you to do that, please. They're Cavallaro. I'm Marinaro. I'll be back tomorrow night, same time, same place, right after the Canadians and the Bruins. Marination.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The Sick Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TB. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.